Blog Talk Radio.
Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas, on Wednesday, March the 8th. And today we'll be chatting with our good friend Fausta Rodriguez Wirtz. She's the editor of Fausta's blog. We're going to be looking at some stories with Latin America, special emphasis on Venezuela, where the situation is just unbelievable. We're going to get into this Odebrecht scandal that appears to be impacting just about everybody in Latin America. Last week we didn't get to Ecuador, and that was my fault, so we'll talk about that. Today, Mexico once again involved in U.S. immigration laws. The International Day of Woman, or the Woman's Day, I'm not exactly sure how to say it, but that's today. There were quite a few marches around the country. And then, of course, the American economy was some good news today. 298,000 jobs were created in the month of February, and anytime you create that many jobs, that's got to be good news for the United States, and especially for Latin America, I would think, with the impact that our economy has down there. Let me say hello to Fausta Rodriguez Wirtz. How are you, Fausta?
Very well, Silvio. How is Dallas?
Just great. I just didn't see a lot of women marching. How about South Florida?
I couldn't tell. I didn't go out the house much because I was involved doing some things I needed to be taken care of. But from what I saw on television, there didn't seem to be a big turnout. Most of it probably due because this is a regular work day. People have to make a living, and not only if you go to something like that, you not only have to take time off from work, probably at no pay or using an otherwise valuable vacation day, you also have to find somebody to take care of your kids because some of the local school districts unions backed some of the women that went on the march, for instance, in Virginia. Amanda Carpenter was writing that 15,000 teachers were not going to go to work today because the union agreed to it. So the schools are closed. I'm sorry, 15,000 students and teachers.
Right. There was a whole district in Virginia. I posted about that at Babaloo this afternoon off of that Amanda Carpenter article that you're talking about. I got the info from her article. And you're right, 15,000 students, a whole district. I think what it all comes down to, and I say this with all respect to women in general, and you obviously know more about women than I do, but I think what it really came down – well, I hope so. I hope so. maybe that's not true. But anyway – I think what it all comes down to, Fausta, is that if you're going to have a day like this of this magnitude, there's got to be something very specific to protest about. And as Amanda Carpenter mentioned in her article, this was sort of a protest day without anything specific to protest. So if I say to you, hey, Fausta, take a day off of work to go out and talk about the value of women to our society. Well, that's probably not enough to get anybody excited. But if you said, let's go out and march about something very specific that maybe troubles women at a particular place, like maybe violence in a city or in a region or whatever, if it's that way, then I think it might create more interest. But I just don't think they had enough to protest. And I will tell you something else, too. And Amanda Carpenter mentioned this in her article, too. I think some of these tactics, after a while, really get to you. I mean, this idea that, you know, that wearing these silly hats and with some of the slogans and some of the placards that I saw on the internet. It seems like a lot of these marches are really more about abortion and left-wing issues, not necessarily issues that matter to a lot of women, Fausta.
Well, I call this Our Ladies of Perpetual Outrage, and this is just another instance. But there are problematic questions on the organizers. One of them was Angela Davis, who she was former leader of the Communist Party in the United States, and she was also Black Panther back in the day. And William Jacobson of Legal Insurrection also mentioned convicted terrorist Razmia Odeh, who served 10 years in Israel in prison for the 1969 Super Soul supermarket bombing that killed Edward Joffe and Leon Kanner. And he has an extensive article on her background. So there are also, Jacobson mentions that he sees the women's strike as a subterfuge to normalize an anti-Israel platform, which in a way matches up with the Black Lives Matter movement at one point. So, I mean, do you really want to be, if you're a woman, you have responsibilities that are unavoidable. You know, you have your children, you have to take care of yourself, you have to make sure your bills are paid. You have to keep your job, and you, taking a day off for no reason is not going to sit well with too many people. I mean, remember that group of guys that got laid off because they said they were just not going to show up for work that time? So,
right.
Of course, you don't want to
You're
get involved
about the
with
immigrant.
Something, you know, with this kind of background on top of it, you know.
Exactly.
And
no, I think you're exactly right.
Itself,
I mean,
the website itself
ahead.
Talks about, in the same spirit of love and liberation, we are recognizing the enormous value that women of all backgrounds add to our socioeconomic system while receiving lower wages and experiencing greater inequities, vulnerability to discrimination, sexual harassment, and job insecurity. So, yeah, it's kind of like a catch-all phrase. It's like an et cetera kind of protest as opposed to, look, we're protesting Obamacare or something to that effect. And by the way,
right.
Girls who think they're not getting paid equal as men, the same amount as men for the same kind of work, I strongly suggest that you do one of two things. Start your own business and get paid on straight commission. If you get paid on straight commission, there is absolutely no excuse for which you can say that you're being paid less than a man doing the same work. As a matter of fact, when I was in real estate, the better paid people were three women and one man. And they
right.
were making hundreds of thousands
yeah.
of dollars.
Exactly. And if you walk into another example would be insurance. If you walk into an insurance agency, you see the same thing. You see a lot of very successful women who are very successfully selling. And so I think you're right. I think, but the other point, and I do want to get to the other topics as well, but I think this conversation about the Day Without Woman, I think that's what it's called, is relevant in Latin America as well, because they had marches of their own. But this pay equity argument is one of those that really needs to be looked at a little bit better, because there have been studies that, I mean, they'll say that women make 77% of what men make. Yeah, that's true. That if you compare the receptionist to the president of the company and then you average all the salaries, well, yeah, that's going to happen. But if you look at women and men, roughly the same experience in the same position, you don't have that, as you indicated. There are very successful women in lots and lots of businesses. Advertising is another business where women do very well. Human resources, you see a lot of very successful women. So I just think, but what you said is true, Fausta, and that is there has to be a better reason to leave your job one day or whatever than just to, you know, go out there and march for women's rights in a very generalistic and vague sense. You know, it's just, what are we protesting for? They don't know. It's just, we're going to have a protest today. Well, that isn't going to do it. And you mentioned the you know, the guys who were fired, I think that was in Kentucky, where 17 guys decided to show to the world what happens on a day without immigrants. Well, they found themselves out of a job. And the reality is, I sympathize with the construction company here. They've got invoices. They've got deadlines. They've got things they got to do. They don't have time to engage in politics. So, you know, if you're going to be a political activist, well, I need somebody at the job. I don't need a political activist. I don't know how many women were impacted by that, but I have a feeling that a lot of immigrants next year are going to remember that incident. But I think at the end of the day, it was just a march without much of a reason other than the usual reasons that you were quoting William Jacobson on. Now, one other bit of news today, very important news, I think, is the American economy produced 298,000 jobs in February. That is a very good figure. And if that continues, Fausto, that's a good sign for the United States. And it's probably a good sign for Latin America because, you know, their economies depend a great deal on the American economy, Fausto.
Yes, and this was a very good sign, not just because of the number, but also because it was not limited to Texas. I mean, you have to keep in mind that most of the jobs that were created during the Obama administration were basically in Texas for the greater part, and not due to federal policy, but to the policies of the state itself.
That's right. No, Texas did very well. You're right. I always tell my friends that we did well because we're anti-Obama, which is not 100% truth, but we did well. But you're right. This was the kind of jobs report that you want to see. Again, I realize people want to give all the credit to Donald Trump, and that's not fair either because it's only the first month. But I do believe that on Election Day 2016, once it was clear that Trump was going to win, once it was clear that there was going to be a Republican Senate and Congress, and once it became clear what they were going to do, I think there was a sense, a confidence boost, if you will, in the American economy. And I think you know as well as I that any capitalist economy works a great deal off of how people feel. Confidence is very important. And I think that to some degree, that's what this figure demonstrate. Well, let's get into, before we have to take a break, I wanted to briefly touch on Ecuador, and then we'll take a break and we'll get into all the other heavy stuff after. But last week, my fault, I didn't ask you about Ecuador. So bring us up to date on what's happening down there. They had an election. What's happening now?
Well, we're going to have a runoff in April. And there has been questions as to which Ecuadorian members of the current government have been involved with the Odebrecht bribing scandal. Liliana Rosales-Tenillen, who is my representative in Congress, requested that Odebrecht release the names of the Ecuadorians that may have been involved. She has received no answer so far. Meanwhile, in Ecuador, the vice presidential candidate, whose last name is Paez, says that he said on Colombian radio that he will file papers regarding corruption of the electoral process itself. The latest survey has Lasso, who is the opposition candidate, ahead for the runoff. And at the same time, Correa has been kind of hinting that he might shut down the Supreme Court, which he controls, since the Constitution allows him, and of course he was the one who amended the Constitution for that to happen. So it's becoming very interesting. He also controls not just the Supreme Court; he also controls the executive branch and the Congress itself. And while all of this is going on, apparently the military have not come out and said so directly, but they have hinted that if Correa does something like that and tries to subvert the result of the runoff, the military are not going to back him. So it's really becoming quite interesting. The it's a very good chance that Lasso may win, and I hope he does. It would be a very good change for Ecuador, but we have to see how it will turn out.
Yeah. Well, this is probably the most interesting election in Ecuador that we've had in quite some time. I mean, I don't remember the last time. Maybe you do, since you follow Latin America so well. But I don't remember the last time that we had such interest. But as I read in your blog, you linked to a couple of, I think, Reuters or a couple of other sources that were talking about the what's happening in Ecuador is that with the drop in commodity prices, you know, you just don't have the money coming in to support all the promises that they made. And it's the old, you know, you can only keep socialism going as long as the commodity prices are up, Fausta.
Yes, Steve Hanke, the economics professor at George Washington University, has a lot of information on Ecuador because he was on the dollarization board when Ecuador decided to dollarize instead of having a local currency. The amount of debt that Ecuador has been accruing since Correa came to power is just immense. And he was able to ride it for as long as commodities were high, but now commodities have gone way down. The Chinese are not as willing to pay as much as they used to, even when they're maybe acquiring properties in the country or maybe not. And now he's in a bad spot. I mean, he just kept throwing money in, and look where it got him.
That's right.
I am sure that he expected Lenin to be the winner of the first round, and he did not. And now he's got the opposition consolidating around Lasso. So let's hope it works out. It would be a very good change.
Let's hope
for
it
the
works
country.
Out.
Apparently, Correa's plan was to have Lenin Romero win, and then Correa run again, because right now he can't even run again without a hiatus. I mean, he cannot run for a third term because that was one part of the constitution that he cannot change. But he could run back after somebody else has an interim session.
All right.
I mean, it's very interesting.
So he could come back later. Well, I hope for the sake of the people in Ecuador that we don't stop eating broccoli. That is the great source of broccoli here in the United States, is the beautiful country of Ecuador. So eat broccoli out there. All of you kids listening, listen, pay attention to your mother when she says eat broccoli. We need broccoli. We have a national security matter here. We need you to eat broccoli. We're going to take a little break. When we come back, we've got two big stories we want to get into: Venezuela and this Odebrecht scandal, which is just unbelievable. I don't think I've ever seen anything like it before. And we'll touch a little bit too on Mexico and some of the things they're doing to keep the Mexicans in the United States, particularly the ones without papers, informed of what's going on. We'll be right back. We're also going to hear from my friend Carlos Gebbi.
This is Carlos Quevedo, Heartbeat, and I would like to see you guys this Saturday night at Nola Brasserie Authentic Cajun and Creole Restaurant, located at 1201 Main Street, downtown Dallas. I'll be performing instrumental high-energy jazz at 7:30 until midnight. So make your reservation today at 469-872-1820.
And if you make your reservation today, make sure you say happy birthday to Luisa, who is Carlos' wife. She celebrates a birthday today. We wish her the very best on her birthday, the wonderful Luisa. She's just a great partner of Carlos, a wonderful lady, wonderful couple. We hope you get to see them if you have a chance here in Dallas on Saturday nights. Fausta, let's just briefly talk about Mexico. They've created a video which basically tells undocumented, illegal, whatever the word is. But if ICE comes to your door, they tell you what to do, what not to do. And I mean, it's hilarious. It's hilarious because it's such an overreach on the part of Mexico. I was telling a Mexican friend of mine, I was showing a Mexican friend of mine the video that you have on your blog, and we were both laughing. We were saying, gee, what if the government of Honduras came up with something like that, telling people in Honduras, without, you know, in Mexico, how to avoid the Mexican police? I wonder how Mexico would react to that, Fausta. But I mean, it's stupid that they do things like this. And you were telling me today that it's pretty costly too, Fausta.
Well, it's, in a way, it's stupid, but you have to think about what is involved monetarily with Mexico keeping a sizable percentage of their population here in the United States, I mean, of their locals here in the United States. Mexico at this point is getting more money out of remittances than what it does from petroleum exports or tourism. Petroleum exports, they get something like $18.7 billion. Tourism is $17 billion, give or take. But from remittances, we've got almost $30 billion. So, of course, they're going to want to have people from Mexico working here and sending money back to the country, since that way the people who come here have career opportunities and have a lot of other things that the Mexican government has neglected to do. So the video it reminds me a lot of a booklet that they put out, which was almost like a graphic novel, very little text and a lot of instructions on how to cross the border years ago. I actually saw that booklet. I read it in person back when it came out. I think it was like 8-10 years ago. The video starts by saying, have an emergency plan. Take care of your family, especially underage children. If they were born in the U.S., go to the nearest consulate and register them as Mexicans. Because what happens is, and they don't tell you this part, if you have an American citizen that is not registered as a Mexican in Mexico, you cannot keep your kids with you in Mexico. Okay?
I didn't know that. I didn't know that part. So if you have kids who were born here, you mean, right?
Right.
But have not been, the kids born here who have not been registered as the consulate for their Mexican nationality, if you take them back into Mexico, they're not considered Mexicans. Is that what you're saying?
Exactly.
Wow.
It would be the equivalent of, you know, when an American is born overseas, of an American mother and father, you have to register at the consulate. Otherwise, you have a lot of paperwork to do to show that this person is an American citizen. But with the difference that in the United States, once you bring if you're a full American citizen and you and both your husband are, and you have a baby that is, you know, born overseas, you can show that, you know, the kid was born, and it's not as hard as it is in Mexico. But in Mexico, unless you're Mexican, you are subject to a lot of restrictions, and I mean very severe restrictions, on where you, for how long you stay and under what conditions. So,
right.
Yeah, so they want you to register your children in the consulate, so in case you get deported, you can actually take them with you with no problem. That's another thing. They have also a section on warrants, whether immigration has a warrant to search your house and regular legal advice. They're spending $50 million on this, and I figure they consider it a good investment, considering that they're getting almost $30 billion of remittances of Mexicans working in the United States and sending money to the country.
Right, but the problem, when I saw the video, I mean, aside from laughing a little bit, the video also, I think, at least to me, projects a reality or a situation that isn't reality. And what I mean by that is, ICE is not really knocking on people's doors, you know, grabbing families with children or whatever. I mean, they're focusing more on people who have a criminal background, and very often they will be arrested. But from what I've seen so far and what I've heard down here, it's been primarily young men or men who are being detained by ISIS, and many of them are like this terrible situation in L.A. where a fellow who had been deported 5 times killed a young mother with 2 children because he was driving drunk. That's more or less what ICE has been concentrating on, not so much knocking on doors saying, you know, we're here to pick you and your children. You see what I mean, Fausto? So I think my guess is that a lot of Mexicans are going to watch that and say, well, but that's not really happening, Fausto. That's my reaction. Do you understand what I mean?
Well, I understand what you're saying. I don't know what the reaction with the Mexicans is, because you also have to keep in mind that there is relentless, and I mean endless, propaganda on Spanish language media, most of which is watched by Mexicans, because the rest of the Latin Americans at this point, and you probably know this from experience, don't want to be hearing Jorge Ramos telling us that we should get all the Mexicans should be living here with no limitation. And there's a lot of propaganda going on, so I couldn't tell you what the Mexicans are believing as fact or not. If you listen to Spanish language news here in Miami, it's amazing what they're saying.
Interesting.
It's whatever they it comes to their minds. That I think they would think that will frighten people. I'm sure that's the criteria at this point.
Right. Well, it's all very emotional at the moment. I mean, it's a purely emotional campaign. There's no real logic or anything or facts being used. It's just purely emotional. Well, let's jump to this topic of Overbrecht. I have a post at the American Thinker, hopefully tomorrow, where I talk about Overbrecht. I link to an article that I believe was out of your, that you posted. Did you post an article from the Washington Post? I know you've posted a lot of different things, but there's one from the Washington Post that really goes into the number of other countries that are involved in this. And it's just fascinating how many countries are touched by this, how many foreign leaders are potentially involved, including the Panama Papers or whatever that was a few months back. We talked about that. And, you know, when I was reading this, it just occurred to me, Fausto, I really want you to answer this, because you probably know have a pretty good idea of this. I don't remember any scandal of this magnitude that involved that many countries. Obviously, you've had scandals in a particular country like you're doing in Brazil right now. But something of this magnitude that touches so many countries, Fausto, I've never seen anything like it, Fausto.
No, this is amazing, the scope and the breadth of the corruption involved. We're talking billions of dollars throughout the whole hemisphere. Actually involving U.S. Companies, which, by the way, that's how a lot of the information has come out, because the stockholders sued Odebrecht in the United States since the shares were being sold in this country. But the Wall Street Journal, the Washington Post, and a number of other Latin American newspapers have been writing about this. In Peru, they have what we talked about, the warrant on the former arrest warrant for the former president. Argentina has a prosecutor. Colombia has seized the property of a former senator. There's word that Santos himself may be involved. There's also, of course, Lula and Dilma in Brazil. And we're talking serious amounts of money. We're talking in Colombia, the investigators found a web of bribery in the country extending beyond the $11 million in corrupt payment Odebrecht acknowledged in the settlement. So they're looking into a state-run bank named the Banco Agrario. They arrested one of the officers of the bank for falsifying documents, and it just goes on and on because we have to remember Odebrecht actually had a department in charge of this.
That's right. They had a department in charge of crony capitalism, basically.
Capitalism. They had a department to directly bribe people. I mean, this is not run-of-the-mill crony capitalism. We're talking direct bribery.
Right. No, I was being facetious, of course. Yeah, no, you're right. They understood how the game was played, and they were willing to look for corrupt politicians, were more than willing to play their game. It is really, even Dominican Republic, Fausta, in this article, even Dominican Republic, a country that you don't think of in a situation like this, even there's even a connection in Dominican Republic I saw in this Washington Post article, Fausta.
Yes, and that's one thing. I mean, it's not just that they were playing the game. It was a game of such size that they were actually setting the rules of the game beyond a certain point. And I mean, that's how vast the corruption was. Any country in Latin America that had any kind of serious infrastructure project coming up, Odebrecht was there willing to go in and bribe somebody to get that job.
Yes,
that's what it comes down to.
Exactly right. That's right. It's a textbook case of pay. What is that? Pay to play. That's kind of what this is. What this is, you know, pay to play. And Odebrecht was more than willing to show you how to do it. Now, obviously, this is a mammoth scandal that is developing and will probably go on for a while. I believe the head of Odebrecht, or the current CEO, is now in jail, right? He was put in jail in Brazil, I believe, right, Fausta?
Yes, he's at a, how can I put it, a country club kind of jail. But, I mean, at least he's in jail. I was surprised when he actually got sent to jail. I never thought they were going
right.
to send him to jail. In fact, I'm even surprised that Lula was even mentioned.
Yes, but this is the guy who shaved his hair that we were talking about a few weeks ago.
Who
we're talking about?
Here's the
fascinating part. Let me ask you another question about Odebrecht, because I was reading this Washington Post article. It's fantastic, this article, by the way. I'm linking to it in my American Thinker piece that I hope is available Thursday morning. And I was reading that they started this business, Fauta, in 1944 when he started the business, and it was just a little neighborhood construction supply company. And they learned pretty quickly that in Brazil you could get real big if you would play the game. And they played the game and obviously became pretty big. And maybe if they had stuck to Brazil, maybe they would have gotten away with it, Fausta. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Actually, I forget at this point if it was his father or his grandfather who were the first in the business. But it doesn't matter. I mean, they grew like the saying used to say, they grew like Topsy. And because of corruption, not because of,
right.
you know, I mean, yes, it was a well-run business, but the reason they got to the size they did was because of what they were doing that was wrong.
That's right. Well, they started in 1944. Their motto was, we're going to take care of our customers and we're going to, you know, be a part of the community. And I'm sure that was what it was in 1944, but more than likely it was either the father or the grandfather of the person in jail right now. Probably the father, I would think, just because of the time difference. But they became something a lot more than that. Now, in my American Thinker article, I speculate about former President Clinton and the Clinton Foundation. And again, this is just my speculation, Fausta. I could be dead wrong on this. But you know, remember the Clinton Foundation was involved with FIFA when they had their little problems a couple of years ago. And I'm beginning to when you look at this scandal, and I was reading this Washington Post article and saying to myself, when am I going to find the name Clinton here? Because it just seems like this would be this is the place where you would run into Bill Clinton. I mean, running around the world asking for money. I mean, it just seems like this is the best. I don't know. It just seems like a perfect place for him to be navigating. I mean, you've got shady characters, you've got corruption, you've got, you know, paid to play. You've got all of the Clintonian elements, Fausta. And so I don't know if he's involved, but I wouldn't be surprised if he is, Fausta.
I haven't been able to find anything that involves the Clinton. The only thing that I found was an article from several years ago. I mean, that mentions in a Brazilian version of El País, the Spanish newspaper, that talks about Bill Clinton when he was president trying to talk Lula into having Raytheon open a factory in Brazil, which supposedly would have brought 50,000 jobs to Brazil. I don't know if there's anything more, but it's not unreasonable to wonder if the Clintons were involved, because don't forget, last year we were talking about the Clinton Foundation and the Fondo Acceso in Colombia, that she started lobbying Congress for approval in 2009 when she was Secretary of State for approval of the Colombia Free Trade Agreement. And in 2010, lo and behold, Bill Clinton, Carlos Slim, and Frank Justra, who is their friend, who pledged $10 million to the Clinton Foundation, opened the Fondo Acceso. And by the way, Frank Justra is also the billionaire who was in charge of the uranium mining company that signed the agreement with that merged with Russia with
right.
the uranium.
Again, that's right. I have no proof. I want to make sure that it's just a speculation on my part. And I want to make sure that's clear that I don't have any proof. And but I'm just saying that when you read the story, when you get into it, and you begin to see all these parts. For some reason, Bill Clinton came into my mind. You know, this is just a place where I can just see him, you know, cutting deals and bringing people together and connecting this guy with that guy, and then a contribution to the foundation, connecting this guy and that guy, and then another contribution to the foundation. But again, that was just that's speculation on my part. But I asked the question. I wouldn't be surprised if we run into the name Clinton Foundation, Bill Clinton, at some point. Folks, last topic today, we want to get into Venezuela. I don't even know where to start. I mean, where would you start talking about Venezuela today, Fausta?
Well, Steve Hanke, again, I keep going back to Steve Hanke today, has a really good article titled PDVSA, the World's Worst Oil Company, and it shows you what the disaster is like, because the amount, with the way PDVSA operates, and I'm reading from the article, it's exploiting reserves so slowly as to render them on the average worthless. If that's not bad enough, PDVSA is generating negative cash flows and piling up a mountain of debt. The arithmetic does not look good. PDVSA faces $10 billion in interest and principal payments this year, but the reports estimate that PDVSA only has $2 billion in cash to service its debt. In principle, the government could come to the rescue, but its stated reserves have dwindled to below $10 billion. So that paragraph alone gives you a snapshot of how bad the economy in Venezuela has gone, that it's in this kind of situation. At the same time, steel production is so low that the steelmakers' employees are planting sunflowers and vegetables on the company land so they can eat something. And as far as the Freedom Index that the Heritage Foundation comes out, the Index of Economic Freedom, Venezuela caught up with North Korea.
Yeah, when you catch up with North Korea, that means you're going down the list. I mean, that's what that means. You know, in a sense, you don't catch up with them. You kind of run back to them, if you know what I mean. When I saw that, Fausta, about, you know, Venezuela and North Korea, that really hit me between the eyes, because, you know, when you drop like that, man, you've really dropped, haven't you, Fausta?
Especially since the Index of Economic Freedom measures the trade freedom, business freedom, investment freedom, degree of property rights protection, and also there looks into corruption and inflation. So inflation in Venezuela right now is something like 800%.
I mean, if inflation is 800%, what does that practically mean? That means that the paper money is, or for that matter, metal money too, is practically worthless from one day to the other, isn't it? I mean, if you have a 50 bolivar bill right now and there's 800% inflation, I mean, what does that thing do worth the next day? It's nothing. Pretty soon, the paper is worth more than the currency, Fausto.
Actually, I read a report, and I haven't been able to verify it, but I read a report from one of the South American newspapers, I forget at the moment exactly which one, that said that counterfeiters are using Venezuelan bills so they can wash off the ink like a pale impress, like they used to do in the Middle Ages, where you had vellum and they would erase the skin, mm-hmm, and write over it. They're using, mm-hmm, Venezuelan bills to use for counterfeiting because of the value of the paper. I mean, the currency itself is worthless, but the paper apparently can be used as, because it's the same weight as other currencies that counterfeiters may find profitable to counterfeit. Isn't, mm-hmm, that insane?
It's absolutely. I mean, it's almost like, you know, you sit there. I mean, when I see the Venezuela stories in your blog, it's almost like I'm scratching my head, saying, how can it be like this? You know, it's almost like reading something out of I don't even know what kind of novel it would be. That's how bad this is. Now, one quick question, Fausta. Whatever happened to the vice president and the allegations of? Or the United States accusing him of drug dealing. How is that coming along?
Well, he's still vice president. The allegations are still in place, and the United States put a lien on his assets that are in the United States, which, of course, made Maduro going to a conniption, but that was to be expected. This is an extremely troublesome appointment. This man has connections not only to Iranians and radical Muslims, but also to drug cartels. So it's very bad news. That's one of the reasons why I'm so pessimistic about Venezuela. I'm sorry to actually say this in a podcast, but I'm at the point where the situation in Venezuela is so bad that I almost fear having to blog about it for a number of reasons, because, you know, it's a horrible situation, but also it's so bad that I'm worried that people may not believe it after a certain point.
Well, I mean, and that's a very good point, because, you know, at some point people might say, oh, come on, you're exaggerating this. No, folks, she's not exaggerating anything. What you see in Fausta's blog is exactly correct. And in fact, I'll say something that verifies what you're saying, Fausta. I have a couple of friends on Facebook who are from Venezuela, and the things that they post are, I mean, the quality of life things that they post are, you know, beyond description. I mean, you sit there and you go, wait a minute, this cannot be happening. But it is.
Yeah.
So I know how you feel, because a lot of times I, you know, I read some of the stuff on your blog, or, you know, Venezuela news and views, you know, Daniel Ducanal's blog, and I get stuff from him as well. And I check the New York Times and the Washington Post. They've got a pretty good America section. So I check on that, and yes, I mean, it's frightening what is happening down in Venezuela. Well, Fausta, we are so happy that you didn't decide to protest today and skip our show. We're sitting there wondering, oh, my gosh, is Fausta going to go on strike on us? But you didn't, and we're deeply grateful that you decided not to exercise your option today and go out and march with the ladies of Miami. So grateful for you joining us, as always.
Thanks. I'm not a protester by nature. If I am really concerned about a political situation, I try other means rather than, you know, going out and protesting in a group. But, yeah, and I would never be part of a protest that the premise is, what do we want? We don't know. When do we want it now?
That's right. That's right. No, I think that, you know, you watch these protests and you think you're watching something out of Saturday Night Live, because it is just, I mean, it's comical. You know, exactly. What do we want? We want women's rights. But you've got those already. What else do you want? You know, I don't know. It's just, it's amazing. Fausta, as always, thank you for your time. It's always a treat to have you. And we look forward to the next time. Keep up the great work at Fausta's Blog. You are really the best. So keep up the great work.
Thank you, Silvio. You're very kind. It's always a pleasure and a privilege to be in your podcast.
Thank you so much. And we want to say to all of our friends at Babalu, thank you for listening as well. The show will be available later, which, of course, all of you know since you're listening at this time. But thank you very much to all of our good friends over at Babalu for listening to the show. Good night, everybody. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas.